Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, this is Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's September 23rd, 2014. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. My good buddy, John Lumbaum from Beer United's here. How are you, John?
Good. How are you doing, Jimmy?
Well, we're going to be talking about did Glazentoren, the Polliner Brauhaus in New York City, and Hops Hill today, a new beer bar in Clinton Hill. So that's a pretty good lineup. But thanks for bringing us, you brought us Jeff van der Steen from Glazentoren, and telling us a little bit about that brewery, because it's one of my favorites that you have with Be United.
Yeah, Jeff can certainly tell you a lot more than I can, but Jeff has sort of had a pretty illustrious career in Belgium as actually a beer writer, first and foremost. He's written many, many books on beer and opened up his own brewery some years back and makes really wonderful, really elegant interpretations of classic Belgian styles.
All right. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I've had a few of your beers, like the Canister, the Scotch Ale, and the Saison d'Herbe. Tell us about how you first started making beer and the philosophy behind it.
Oh, I started brewing beer 30 years ago because I wrote about beer in the beginning, not books, but articles, and I was very critical. And the brewers told me, well, do it yourself. And I thought, okay, I try it myself. And the first brew was 50 liter. It's very, very small in the garage. You know, like garage musicians, it was a garage brewery. And sometimes the beer was very good. Other times it was not good. And I didn't understand why. And the only possibility is go to school. School is cool. And in Belgium, fortunately, we have a lot of brewery schools. So I went to the brewery school in Ghent, the oldest brewery school in Belgium, founded in 1887. And after the studies, I restarted brewing beer in small quantities, and then the beer was good. Every time it was good. And of course, it's a pity to brew only 50-liter beers a time. And with a friend, we started a small brewery, brewing 500 liters a time, so 10 times more. And we thought we brew one Saturday a month. We fill bottles another Saturday a month. I will open the shop one Saturday, and my colleague also one Saturday. And that's it. And it went wrong, because we had to brew every week. And after 2 years, it was impossible. So we bought a new brew house in Germany, Andreas, in Germany,
yeah,
and a 20-hectoliter brew house. And then we said, now we're okay for all time. We brew one time a week for all time. And again, it went wrong. We brew now 2 times a week, and still it's a problem. So it's rather successful.
So people like your beer.
Yeah.
You know, now it's maybe when you started, it was unique, but there's so many new breweries that are starting that way, like Transmitter in Queens and Hill Farmstead in Vermont, making small batches. And before you know it, I think everybody likes the small brewers. And that's what I love your beers.
Thank you.
Yeah. John, they've got a special identity. I mean, Glazentoren, most people haven't heard of it.
Well, it's a very small brewery, and we're very fortunate to get the beer we can. You know, it sells out every ounce immediately when we get a quantity of draft. And, you know, what Jeff was saying earlier is that the number of breweries in Belgium is actually growing pretty dramatically right now. So we're seeing the same thing in Belgium right now that we're seeing in New York, that we're seeing in Ireland, that we're seeing in England, that we're seeing in sort of all these regions around the world where there's a lot of very small new breweries opening up.
We have another brewer here too. We have Andreas. Say your name, buddy.
Andreas Heidenreich.
And you're at the Polliner has a brew house restaurant in the Bowery. So you're making German style beer, but you're actually making beer in New York City.
Yes. It's German style, like a Helles, Solager, or
a dark lager, a Hefeweizen, and for the US market, I start with a Munich Pale Ale. It's more hoppy, and all the ingredients, the hops, are coming from Washington State. And the important thing is the Hefeweizen. This is the number one beer actually from Palana in Munich, and yeah.
And that's your number one. How are you doing in terms of selling beer? Is it popular on the Bowery?
Yeah. So we start with Oktoberfest last Saturday, and I had 2,000 liter of Oktoberfest. Now I have only 1,000. So it's a good business at the moment.
All right. Well, how did you get started? You know, Jeff started in a garage. How did you start brewing, Andreas?
Actually, I started in high school. I made a presentation about beer. And then I said I was 17, 16. I was legal to drink. And I decided, okay, it's a nice job to make an apprenticeship about this, because after high school you have to do an apprenticeship in Germany. And yeah, I went to Palana. 2.5 years I made my apprenticeship, and then I went to university to Berlin, and I made my master degree in beer, 4 years. Yeah, and then back to Palana, and they sent me over to Asia. I was 9 years a brewmaster in Asia, in China, in Taiwan, also a few times in Singapore.
Does Palana have different brew houses?
Yes,
around
we have.
The world?
At the moment, we have 28 microbreweries worldwide, so most of them in Asia. It's 20 in China, 1 in Singapore, 1 in Taiwan, 1 in Jakarta. In Russia, we have 5. And in New York, it's the first one now in the U.S.
All right. We also have Kenny and Joe. There's a new beer bar in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn called Hop Hills. And I know you guys have a great selection of beer. Kenny, I've seen you at some beer events. What do you think about these two guys, Polliner Brauhaus and your favorite Glasenthorn?
Yeah, well, I just met both of these gentlemen, and it's been quite interesting so far. They're great characters, and I'm a beer supporter, and I'm behind the scenes, kind of serving beer. But I'm always happy to meet brewers, and just happy for their success and the great beers that they're putting out, and that they're part of the history of what we're doing in the United States here.
That's great. And Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jimmy.
So what made you guys open a beer bar in Clinton Hill?
We've been involved with beer since 2000, selling beer at a grocery store, and later managing a bar and bartending. And I reached a point when I'm 40 years old and it's time to make my own stuff. And I learned a lot, and I put everything I like in this bar. And so far, people appreciate what we have, and hopefully we'll get to a new level.
You got a great location. I was at Kelso Greenpoint Beer Works last week, and you're right around the corner on Fulton. And from the notes from our team, you're where Biggie Smalls used to hang out, the notorious B.I.G. On Fulton Street. So
yeah, I knew a little bit about this guy, but everybody keep telling me, oh, there's a lot of history around here, and it fits what we're doing, and we're just trying to bring the past and the future all together in whatever we're trying to do at Hops Hill. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I don't even know who Biggie Small is or Notorious B.I.G., but I thought you might. Anyways, Andrea, so we were just drinking your beer. Tell us the beer that we're drinking and a little bit about it.
This Oktoberfest beer, it's a type of Märzen. Märzen cold, it's around 5.8, 6% alcohol. And the color is like a copper color. It's more multi-flavor and less hoppy. And it's made with malt, barley from Germany, and the hops from the Hallertau, also from Germany.
John, you guys have a lot of German beers at United. What did you think of this Polliner Oktoberfest?
Oh, it's great. I know it well. I mean, Polliner has a really remarkable history in the Oktoberfest, dating back to 1810. And their Märzen has historically been one of the benchmarks.
But your recipes, this isn't just the typical Polliner beer. Is it a special recipe just for New York or for America?
Yeah, this all my beers here in New York is made with my recipes. So when you go to Palana in Beijing or Shanghai, you will have a different Hefeweizen or lager, because every brewmaster have a different water, have different barleys or malt. And it's
so like in Beijing, what are the styles of beer that are more popular in those other countries?
So in China, we made lager beers and dark beer. No, only in Shanghai we make also Hefeweizen. But here we need more beers on tap for the US market. That's why I start with a Munich Pale Ale. And yeah, Hefeweizen, lager and dark, that's all our standard beers. And then I make also seasonal beers like now it's Oktoberfest, Winterbock is coming with a Schwarzbier style. Salvator, the double bock for March, Maybock, and yeah.
Yeah. Jeff, I always want to call you Jan van der Steen.
Okay.
I can call you Jan, but you're Jeff.
Jan Michael.
What do you think? I mean, to me, you're a specialty small brewer, mm-hmm. and then you've got this international corporation that's also opening little brew pubs. I mean, you must have some philosophy about what good beer is, or you just taste it in the glass. What do you do?
No. For me, it's a good thing. Because every of those small plants will brew something that more or less is original. And that's for me better than the import from Munich here, because then it will be the same. So, congratulations.
Thank you.
Do it.
That is cool. I mean, is there anything in the Belgian beer scene that's like that, or certain brew pubs you like to go to, or cool scenes that are happening?
In Belgium, you have not that much brew pubs. You have breweries, but no, brew pubs is only one in Leuven. Leuven, the base of Stella Artois. There is a second brewery, a small pub brewery, but normally we don't have it. We brew beer and we sell it. And then to sell it to clients, that's for pubs. It's not for us.
Yeah. And are you surprised at the way the beer scene's changed in 30 years since you started?
Enormously. Enormously. When I started writing about beer in Belgium every 2 weeks, a brewery stopped brewing. And then around 1980, there was one, the Dolle Brouwers, one new brewery. And the beer lover said, wow, one new brewery. Since then, every year, there's more and more. And not only more and more breweries, so also more and more beers. And also more and more original beers. And that's important. There's enough beer in the world. AB InBev, Belgian biggest company of the world, makes enough beer for the world. But everywhere they're the same.
We don't have to drink it.
No.
What did you? I like what you poured for us. What's this?
Well,
this is good.
This Cheers. Is this is our Saison d'Herpemere, because you always say Saison d'Herp. It's herb.
That's what I said. Herb.
Herb. Mir. When you want to pronounce it. Well, Saison is a very old Belgian style. It was made 300 years ago on farms. Because in summertime, there was a lot of people working on the farm. There were no machines. But in wintertime, there was no work for them. And instead of buying beer in a brewery, the farmer said, we can do it ourselves. So they started brewing beer at farms. And the special thing was, it was a beer that had to last for a long time. Because it was brewed in wintertime to drink in summertime. And that's about 6 months. So 300 years ago, 6 months was a very, very long time. Normally, beer was brewed and drunk immediately. So they had to find tricks to make beer lasting as long as possible. And that's the start of what we call saison. Saison means season. It is brewed in winter season to drink it in summer season. All the saisons are very dry. I hope you taste that there's no sweetness in it. Very dry. Why? Because when you drink sweet beers, you get thirsty. And a saison was to
May
give
I have more, please.
Well, yes, you can have more, and the workers had to drink that beer not to become thirsty, but against the thirst. It's well hopped, but well hopped with hops with low bitterness. So there's a lot of hop in it, because hop is good for the conservation of beer. But instead of a little bit hop with high bitterness, we put very much hop in it with low bitterness. For my friend next to me from Germany, German hops like Hallertau, Spelt, Tettnang.
Aroma hops,
Aroma hopfen, but very much. So the bitterness is not crispy, it's a nice bitterness.
Yeah. Andreas, what do you think of this beer?
I like it. I never had it before, but it's this style, but it's very good beer.
Kenny, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, I'm totally digging it. I like just the very faint hint of lemon I'm getting, and it's got such a big bouquet, actually. It's a little more complex than I was expecting it to be.
Jeff's going to say, stop the compliment. So what's wrong with this beer, Jeff?
Well, there's nothing wrong, but I'm here, so nobody dares to say there's something wrong. Nobody.
What I want to know is, how can you make the beer... So if I'm working in the fields, mm-hmm. and I'm drinking a Saison like this, what about it makes me not thirsty?
Because there's no sweetness in it.
Have you ever heard that, John?
Normally sweeter beers do tend to trigger thirst in the same way that food would trigger thirst. One thing I really like about this is this probably has a bit more alcohol than historically a Saison might have had.
Of course.
But it also, it's mouth-watering. It's refreshing. It's almost like a lemonade as opposed to a milkshake.
You know, talking about working in the field and thirst, a friend of mine is a doctor, and he said that when they make Gatorade, they modeled it, the electrolytes, on what's in beer. Mm-hmm. And do you think that's true? Would you drink beer after working out or working in the fields?
I drink beer before I work, during the work, and after the work.
Athletes, baseball players used to drink beer in between innings, you know? And
yes.
And, you know, Jimmy, to save you from some log rolling, I will mention that this, I believe this beer is on draft at Jimmy's 4E3 tonight.
Yeah, we're going to tap it tonight, and we'll have it on for the next 2 days until it runs out.
Awesome.
But we're always psyched. I mean, that's one thing. I mean, to me, just meeting you, I'm psyched. But I do like your beer, and, you know, let's keep drinking it. Well, but you brought other beers too, didn't you, John?
There's some others.
Yeah. Maybe next we'll tap the Andinica. Andinica it is. This is the triple from the Glasentoren.
Let's pop that, and we'll take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit GreatBrewers.com today.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're in Roberta's in Bushwick. Come out and support them. They have pizzas, but they have more than pizzas. Great menu, and we love being out here. And cheers to heritageradionetwork.org. You can become a member. Check it out. And it's there's so many great shows, including another beer show on Mondays. We got Ferment About It with Chris and Mary. So there's a lot going on in the show. My buddy Damon Bolta has the Speakeasy. So he talks about cocktails and spirits. There's a lot of great stuff. So, but I'm really excited. We got John Lumbaum. We're very happy to have you on once again from Be United International. And you brought, to me, one of the most mysterious, interesting guys in beer, Mr. Jan Jeff Vandersteen from Glasentoren, which is the kind of thing that you would give us like one case of beer a year, and we'd talk about it forever, but we always enjoyed it. So, you know, Andreas from Pollinger and Kenny and Joe from Hoppus. You guys want to ask, you know, Jeff is one of the guys that started out as like a garage brewer in Belgium, even before people were doing that in the States. So why don't everybody, I'll ask them a question, because we've been drinking this beer, and I know you guys know a lot about beer. So, Andreas, you want to?
Yeah. It's the first time I had this beer, and I never had so much Belgian beer before.
Wow.
But I know Belgian beer very strong. I know Hoegaarden, but this is very good, actually. It's fruity. It's not so hoppy what you said before. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. And it's strong. It's 8% now. Now before it was 7. Now we are by 8%. So I think we have a good time here.
Well, actually, Jeff, if I could...
But for that alcohol, we have a reason. You know, Belgium and Germany are next to each other.
Yeah.
And more than 100 years ago, the way of drinking in a pub was the same. Low alcoholic beers and alcohol. In Germany, it was Schnaps. In Belgium, it was Geneva. Low alcohol and Geneva. Mm. But they still do the same in Germany. So low alcohol for beer, Schnaps. In Belgium, there was a law, 1919, forbidding high alcoholic drinks.
Oh, you had your own prohibition.
It was a kind of prohibition. But beer was not forbidden, only alcohol, so Geneva. And then the brewers said, okay, when there is no more Geneva, then we will raise the percentage of the alcohol. And since then, I think Belgium is worldwide known for its strong beers. Maybe you know that West Vleteren 12 has 12% alcohol. That's the same as wine. It's very, very strong. And in that direction, this beer is a triple. Before the First World War, so 100 years ago, the amount of alcohol in beer was about 2.5-3%. Then came the double. Double means two times more. So beers from 6 to 7. After that, of course, in the 30s, three times more, triple. And this is that type, a triple 8.5%.
Now, Jeff, along the same lines, very commonly practiced in Belgium, adding a little bit of candy sugar to help mm-hmm. ferment up the alcohol a little bit. I mean, this being a triple, I'm sure you're using a little bit of candy sugar in it.
Yeah, we do the same. Mm-hmm. Well, what I try to do in that small Glazen Toren brewery is to brew classic Belgian beer styles. I don't try to invent new things, only the Belgian classics, but my way. My way means not 100%. The same recipe as I learned in school, I change. I want to create.
I did it my way.
Yes, yes. That's for example.
I got to listen to this, Jeff. This is what I want. I want to hit this guy to talk all night. If you've seen the ads, the most interesting man in the world. This is Jeff Vandersteen. Wow. He's got the beard and he's lived the life. So,
wow.
You are, man. All right.
Okay. Cheers.
Hopefully, we'll grow as old and brilliant as you, man. So
cheers.
You want me to sing more?
Well, no. The only thing I want to say is, for example, this triple has more bitterness in general than the other Belgian triples. But again, a nice bitterness. The hops are not aggressive. And for me, that's the definition of Belgian beers. They must be in balance. Complicated, but balanced. Not the bitterness must be number one. Maltiness must be number one. Sourness must not be number one. They all must be there, but in balance.
The Glazen Toren. But what yeast do you use? I mean, do you have the same yeast for all the beers?
No. And because the brewery is too small, we don't have an own yeast. But in Belgium, most breweries are not competitors. We colleagues. So for every beer, I need a specific yeast, and I have it for free in the larger breweries. They give it for free.
So you use a beer yeast or sometimes also a wine yeast? Or
no, only beer yeast. Only beer yeast. Hmm. And in the saison and in this beer, no spices. Hmm. The third one we have is spiced. That's a sin for Andreas, because in Germany they cannot add spices. Yes. But in Belgium we can do it.
And because we have the law of Reinheitsgebot, it's the law of purity, and we can use only four ingredients. It's the barley or wheat malt, the yeast, the hops, and the water. And that's why when we do a double bock with 8% alcohol, it's what we said before, it's more sweet, it's a malty flavor inside, and yeah, sometimes you get headache, but 8% is very strong.
But this is not sweet, I guess.
No, this is not sweet.
I don't like sweet beers.
Yeah.
You know, Jeff, you just mentioned that your Saison uses no spices.
No.
That's somewhat atypical. Most Saisons are associated with sort of a more spicy portfolio.
No. Let us say that in the Saison world, there are two types, with and without spices. With spices, I guess Brasserie à Vapeur is one of the most famous.
Mm-hmm.
Without spices, Brasserie Dupont. And I follow Dupont. Mm-hmm. Olivier, the brewmaster of Dupont, is a very good friend. So I follow Dupont. No spices, but a lot of hops.
Excellent.
What other breweries are you friendly with in Belgium? I'm sure all of them, but...
No, not all of them, of course, but... but I wrote a book on Trappist beers. So I know not only the beers, but I know the monks very well. So a lot of Trappist beers are my favorites. And my first love, and until today, one of my dearest beers are Lambic beers. I think the name Geuze is well known here.
Yes, for sure.
I wrote three books on Lambic beers. Three, because I love that beer type. It's a beer type without yeast. It's even more Reinheitsgebot than the beers in Germany.
Yeah.
There's no yeast in it. The fermentation is spontaneous. Yeah. It's incredible.
Because 1516, when the law was founded, there was only barley, hops, and water, and no yeast, because the yeast comes in 1900.
Yeah. But now they have yeast in Germany.
Yeah, yeah.
In lambic beers, there's no yeast. It's one of the oldest beers in the world, brewed the same way.
Do you think that in 1516, with the German beer sour, like a lambic?
Yeah, I think so. But I have to say, because this was the Duke of Bavaria, he makes a law of purity, so Reinheitsgebot. And before, the guys or the monks who made the beer, they used everything. They even used marijuana, what they found. And some people.
One time I had a friend brought me.
Why not?
A friend brought me from Poland an herbal liqueur. And I swear to God, it had wild psychedelic mushrooms in it. So you think that might have been in the beers back then?
Yeah.
Different things from the forest. And
yes, and that's why the Duke of Bavaria said, it's enough, I make this law, and it's only barley, hops, and water, because yeast was not...
So do you think that people were actually making beers more like psychedelic, or...
Yeah,
did he want to control the people and the workers?
Even some people died before.
Right.
Because he used some...
Yeah, people talk about the Reinheitsgebot as really the first Consumer Protection Act in human history.
Well, but we had the same in Belgium, but not... It was not forbidden to use all those spices, but they were controlled. The only way to purchase those spices was to buy them at a landlord, a prince, a king. You understand?
Like, so what were some of the other spices that were dangerous?
I don't know.
I don't know what they found in the forest.
And this has to do with witchcraft, right? Brewing and perhaps the love potion or...
Yeah,
poison or something.
Love potion is not bad, I guess.
You guys are like the most interesting guy in the world. And I got the brew from, but Kenny, let's ask Jeff a question. Something from your perspective as a New York City beer guy.
Well, as I'm sitting here listening, I just feel deeply honored to be in a
no more compliments.
Ah, no
tough
compliments.
Question.
Yeah. No more compliments.
Like, why didn't he shave today or something? Come on.
I'm going to avoid that one.
Oh, it's I have that beer more than 40 years, so no shaving.
And holding it well.
That's where...
Jeff, I just have a question. I'm a classical musician, and I'm sitting here listening to you speak, and I've been in the company of great composers and conductors and maestros, and I'm just getting the same feeling as I do when I'm sitting in a room with such knowledgeable and passionate people. What is it that drives you to do the beer day after day for so many years and keep it going? And do you ever feel like you lose your passion, or does it grow as you keep continue brewing?
Well, it's still growing.
Still growing.
Yeah.
Well, it tastes like it.
Because the more I know about it, the more I love it.
Yeah.
A lot of people thinks you put water and malt and hops together, you stir it a little bit, you put a little bit yeast in it, and there is the best beer of the world. Well, right. It's not true.
Right.
It's a process of rise and fall. And for a good recipe, you need a lot of time and a lot of tasting. And for me, that's important. In the brewery school, they learned the techniques. Yeah. But the first thing they should learn, the students, is to taste. Because when you taste your beer, you can find taste you like, taste you don't like. And then with your technique, you can approve the recipe. That's important, and they don't learn it. And therefore now, since 5-6 years, there is a course in Belgium called Zytology. Zytology means the knowledge of beer. And they learn to taste, and that's very important.
That's great.
Some beer?
And let's get Joe, also from Hop Hills. Do you have a question for Jeff? Like, for example, do you carry Glasentorn, or would you?
Not yet. We just opened, and we're trying to pick and choose when it comes to bottles. And it's always hard for us to sell big bottles at the bar. And to always, like, ask for, like, a smaller format, 12.7, or if it's available on draft, that's what we really like. I mean, this beer, for me, will live for 3-4 years in my refrigerator with no problem. But the profit margin on it is really low for a bar. And, yeah, I don't know. It's always better to have a smaller one.
One thing about Hop Hills, you guys have great pricing on beers. When I was there 2 weeks ago, and you had, like, one of our friends, White Birch Hop Sessions, and a pint for, like, $5. And then you said, oh, it's happy hour, and it's $4. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, that's, you know...
I mean, it's a small...
I like that.
it's a small place, and our overhead is very, very low. So I do a lot of stuff on this place. I clean, and I open this place, and I'm saving a lot of money, so I'm kind of sacrificing myself to start this place, and it's what pricing always turns me off when I go to bars. I know it's a business, but I'm trying to cater to really beer lovers and trying to make some money in the same time, and just enjoying myself. And we'll see how it goes.
You know, your area is very interesting. I mean, Clinton Hill, you got the Kelso, Greenpoint Beer Works. And we were there on Saturday for the New York City Blocktoberfest, and I walked 2 blocks down to the Met Food, which is a supermarket, and it had one of the largest selections of really good craft beer I've seen. I mean, better than what we've seen in the East Village in beer stores.
Yeah, so surprisingly enough, yeah, and at very good prices. And if you walk also another mile down, you get, like, more stuff for even cheaper prices. So that's why, like, there was this big demand for a beer bar like us in this neighborhood, and that's why people love us being there, because this neighborhood was starving, or they were thirsty for good beer for a long time.
And what do you I mean, Jeff, you know, this is a big part of the beer scene in New York. You know, guys like Joe, and
I want to say something about the bottles. Maybe it's difficult to buy that type of bottles, but it's a champagne bottle. And for me, when you drink a beer alone, that's not good. It's dangerous to become a drunk. So a good beer you have to share. To share with somebody you love, with a friend. And therefore, I only do big bottles. So in our brewery, no small bottles. And I know that when we start smaller bottles, we can sell more. But I don't want it. Beer is for me a culture. It's not only business. I'm not part of Polaner. You understand?
I work for myself. So for me, beer is more than business, is a culture. Big bottles or nothing. I'm sorry, my friend.
And draft, of course.
It's
and,
okay.
And draft.
And, Jeff, this tells a few things about this last beer we just had.
Oh, well, this last beer, I hope...
What's the name of it?
Jan de Lichte. Jan de Lichte. It's the name of a man. And I hope Andreas will taste... This is a Weizen.
It's a Weizen, yeah.
But it's a Weizen the Belgian way. And the Belgian way means with spices. So it's not only with wheat, 50%. 55% here is wheat.
Okay.
It's more than 50% is wheat, but there are also spices in it. No secrets, you know. Coriander and curacao. Curacao means orange, bitter orange peels. They were in it. And Oegaarden is, I guess, the most well-known Belgian Weizen. Yep. But that's only 5%. That's a light beer for Germans, okay? with schnapps.
Yeah, with schnapps, yeah.
But we like more, so this is a double Weizen.
You guys are awesome. I'm loving the beers. And John, you know, it's cool. This is actually the first time I've had, like, I've tasted this many Glasentoren at once.
It's nice having all the bottles in one place, absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's a great thing. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
We're thrilled to announce a special event, the Silver Snail 25 Years of Slow Food. This event is hosted by Slow Food USA, Heritage Radio Network, and Roberta's Pizza. It's been 25 years since Carlo Petrini and a group of activists launched a peaceful revolution to defend regional traditions, good food, gastronomic pleasure, and the slow pace of life. The slow food movement has since evolved into a comprehensive approach to food that recognizes strong connections between plate, planet, people, politics, and culture. Today, this movement involves thousands of projects and millions of people in more than 160 countries worldwide. Join us for a dialogue between Slow Food's founder, Carlo Petrini, and locavore activist, Alice Waters, as they reflect on the evolution of the food movement and all things slow. Friday, October 3rd from 11:30 to 2:30. You can go to our website and click on the link on the right-hand side of the page to RSVP. We can't wait to see you there.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We've got two cool brewers here. We got Jeff Vandersteen from Glasentoren and Andreas Heidenreich, the brewer from Polliner New York City Brauhaus. What were you guys just talking about on the break?
That's a secret.
Like beer geek stuff.
But it was not about women.
No.
We talked about beer.
I know you only talk about beer. That's all you ever talk about. You have women here, though. I keep calling you the most interesting guy in the world. And you've got two women here with you. It's just like the advertisement.
Well, it's dangerous because the two girls is too many, three is a crowd, and four, you're dead.
But who is here? You brought three friends with you. You're traveling with an entourage from Belgium.
Well, her husband is there too.
Oh, there's a guy over there.
Yeah. They're friends.
And then what, this other lady next to you?
Oh, that's my...
I am connected.
That's my chief.
Do you say paramour or chief?
That's my chief.
Your chief.
Yeah.
Good. All right. And John, what's it like? At Be United, you have all these amazing brewers and good friends. And, you know, he mentioned the Dola. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone loves the Stille Nacht. Mm-hmm. And what is it like for you as a rep when these guys come to town?
It's just an absolute joy. There's sort of three components. On one hand, we love taking the brewmasters we partner with around to show them the market and show them accounts and show them where their beers are and help use their expertise to help sell their beers. And for us, it's an honor to be able to spend a day. For me, just to walk around with Jeff for a day is a tremendous honor. And then also, accounts really value getting to meet the man, as you know, you keep saying. It's just such a wonder. It adds such value to the product, but also it's just so educational.
Yeah, to be have a bar like Jimmy's Number 43 or Hot Pills, to have a brewer from another country come is always like the highest honor.
And know? They always come to New York first, so it's perfect.
Joe, you've met a lot of brewers over the years? And
Yes, I did. And most of the time people would ask me, oh, why are you selling this beer? I said, oh, I know the sales rep. I know the guy who did this beer, and that's what I'm trying to do. I said, I'm not selling something that for somebody to do a favor, selling what I love and for people that I really have met and I care about.
You guys have a great selection of beer. You have a big wall of bottles and coolers, and you have great drafts. When I was there last week, I had the White Birch hop sessions. How did you get that on your list? Because I think White Birch is a great brewery from New Hampshire.
Yeah, I guess it just got to New York around the same time when we opened our bar. And the sales rep from Union mentioned that it's the first time here, and I think this would be a nice addition to your bar. And, that's the only reason we have.
Let's turn the table. So you've got a great beer bar, and you've been working in the industry a while. And you brought a beer. We're going to have our brewers, Jeff and Andreas, taste these American beers. So what's the first beer that you guys opened for us?
So that's Three Floyds Zombie Dust. Me and Kenny, that's our favorite, like pale ale that we drink most of the time. Kenny is from Indiana. And every time he go back home, he just bring a bunch of cases with him. And this is kind of like our religious beer that we always start any session with.
So, Kenny, tell us, why is this called Zombie Dust from Three Floyds?
That's a question I still haven't found an answer to. I know that Three Floyds has a heavy metal theme, and they're all about the zombies, and we also have a Dark Lord sitting there in the back on the table there. So it's kind of their theme for the brewery. But I don't know exactly why they call it Zombie Dust, but when you taste it, you can see that the name's pretty appropriate.
Well, there's certain culty beers, like when I hear about Dark Lord, so my ears perk up, and I know people look for that beer. I mean, how do you feel as you know, curating a beer list at a beer bar? Are you looking for cult beers, or are you looking for the best beers?
Yeah, I mean, you always look for best beer, but sometimes you have to go with the flow and see what's really very hyped out there. I mean, a lot of hyped beer out there that I really don't like, but people ask for it, and I have to get it. I mean, they are really decent, but yeah, this is how it is.
You want to tell us some? No one will hold it against you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hyped beers.
A Hattie Topper, for example.
What would you, we did a show recently. If I said, a customer comes in, and what does he say? He says, oh, do you have Hattie Topper? What would you say? What would you offer him or her?
I will tell him, you know what, we have a Barrier Money IPA on draft, and this is as good as, even better than a Hattie Topper, and it's just made across the street. It's kegged on a Thursday, delivered on a Friday, and also tapped on a Friday, the same day.
Cheers to Joe and Hot Pills. We hear a lot of good things about you guys. You know your stuff. Okay, so Jeff and Andreas, we're drinking the Three Floyd Zombie Dust. You guys tell us what you think of it as brewers, and then we're going to ask you, we're going to quiz you about the American cult beers and see what you know about American beer.
Because I smell it, and I know directly which hops they used. It's Amarillo hops from Washington State.
You know that right away.
Because it's the same smell as my Munich Pale Ale, because I use the same hops.
What about you, Jeff?
Well, I said immediately to Andreas, this is Amarillo. well, I don't use them, but I know them, of course. And one of the reasons I don't use them is, why do I have to use American hops to export beer to the USA? Then you have the taste you have here. So I use only European hops. Then you can, when the beers are here, you can taste the difference.
But I have to say one thing with Amarillo hops, Cascade hops. It's very difficult to get it here. When you're a small brewer like Palana, with only 10 hectoliter
in a brewery, house.
It's always sold out, sometimes on a waiting list for 1 or 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to get the hops. But for all the IPAs and pale
ales. But I don't have anything against American hops because but nobody tasted it, so I'm very happy. But in Jan de Lichte, there is Cascade. Cascade is also an American hop, but yeah. Nobody said I taste Cascade. You know why? The Cascade, the hops are hidden. Hidden with the malts, hidden with the unmalted wheat, hidden with the spices. So you don't say it, but it's there. And here you smell and you taste immediately. This is Amarillo. So I should say to the brewer, try to hide it. It's more mysterious. Try to be more mysterious, okay?
That's a mysterious answer, but thank you.
Yeah, but I have to say it's American way, and I like it. It's a new market here in the U.S. It's changed for 10 years ago, and I like it, actually, because there's so many craft brewers everywhere in every city, 5-6 small breweries, and this is good because in Germany we go a different way. At the moment, we go with the big breweries buy the small breweries, like was here before 50 years maybe with Budweiser and Miller. Mm-hmm. So it's
John. What are some of the German breweries that you guys are importing that you think are really unique?
Well, there's sort of two different tacks we have with the German brewing. I mean, we have a number of extremely historic German breweries like Schneiderweisse, like Reisdorf Kolsch, like Achschlankerle, like Zum Irrige. We also have some more modern breweries. For instance, we have Bayerischer Bahnhof in Leipzig. They sort of rejuvenated and almost rescued the Gosse style. However, they only opened in, I think, 1999 or 2000. But their brewmaster, Matthias Richter, is one of the most progressive brewmasters in Germany and does a lot of really unexpected, really unusual things that are much more coming from sort of the U.S. craft beer or Belgian beer than the German traditions.
Maybe in the next year, Stone Brewery from San Diego.
Right.
It's open one in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe more breweries from US will be come to Germany and open this craft brewery scene. So
yeah,
I think it's a good way, actually, also for Germans.
Yeah, many of the German people, people in the German beer community are seeing a lot of opportunities for import to Germany. And there are some, Germany hasn't sort of seen the brewery explosion that a lot of the rest of the world has, but there are some smaller brewers opening up in different places in Germany, making some often extremely high-priced premium sort of products.
Let's ask one more question. So, Joe and Kenny, you guys, Hops Hill. And Clinton Hill. That sounds cool.
Yes.
What was your favorite beer today?
I really liked the triple. That's the first Belgian triple I really liked. When I first got into Belgium in early 2000, triple was my least favorite style because always you get this prominent Belgian yeast in it and the sweetness that I couldn't take. But this one, it's almost a hybrid with the saison, and this is a drier version of a triple that I can really drink a 12 ounce of.
And Kenny, what about you?
For me... I love the saison. I'm a fan of saison, and I don't openly talk about it being a kind of a typical American craft beer drinker. But the saison was beautiful. I really appreciated it, and like you said, it wasn't overly sweet, and I think it was just true to the style. And to me, I feel like I had an experience of just drinking a real traditional saison, traditionally brewed and made. So
thank you, Ken. Yeah. And Jeff. What would you like to tell our listeners about Belgian beer before we sign off? I know you have many things to say.
Wow.
But
it's difficult. It's difficult. But one thing I have to say is Belgium is the only country in the world where beer is still brewed in four different ways. We have spontaneous fermentation, so the lambic beers without yeast. We have the mixed fermentation. Maybe you know beers like Rodenbach. They're partially spontaneous, partially with yeast, and then they mix together. Then we have top fermented beers, of course. Most of the special beers are top fermented, and we have the low fermented beers. So the only country with all that different types of fermentation. Secondly, Belgium is also the land with most different styles. We have a lot of styles now copied all over the world. We have the saisons, we have the lambic beers, we have old brown. You know, we have the fruit beers now winning all over the world, but the original fruit beers are coming from Belgium. They were always there. And last of it, the highest alcohol beers in the world are coming from Belgium too, because we don't drink alcohol like whiskey, like gin, all those things. We only drink beer. And therefore, the Belgian beer culture is very alive. The same in restaurants. Come to Belgium. Eat meals cooked with beer. And drink a good beer with it. You're welcome.
Jeff, you're great. Thanks for coming on. We'll give a quick shout-out. First of all, special events coming up in New York City. October 11th, we're hosting an event, Oktoberfest, at the Seaport. We're going to have some specialty Be United beers, Gravity Casts from Franconia, from the Shelton Brothers, and a nice selection of small New York City breweries, including Bridge and Tunnel, Secret Engine, Barrier, Other Half, and Single Cut. It's going to be a great afternoon, and there'll be grilling and bratwurst competitions and other things. Some of the best bratwurst in New York will be there. So that's Oktoberfest. Check it out at goodbrewseal.com. Also, hello to Brooklyn Poor that's coming up this weekend from the Village Voice friends. And at Jimmy's Number 43, if you're doing nothing on Friday, the new cool duo. One thing, like Jeff started with a garage brewery. There's still guys doing that in New York, and there's more than ever. Secret Engine and Rocky Point collaborated on. They're making these really crazy German-style casks on Friday night at Jimmy's Number 43. You can taste one. So I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who've helped bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to everyone, Jeff, John, Andreas, Joe, and Kenny, and including Jeff's entire family of people from Belgium. So thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and our Uber engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, yeah.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.